I'm joined today by Matt Nelson. Matt has been touched by CHD as both a husband and a father. Matt's first wife, Tina, passed away in 2013 due to complications from cardiomyopathy. Two of Matt's sons also live with this condition. A warning that this episode contains information about bereavement. Please listen in a safe space and remember you can pause if you need to.
So trying to have that really positive frame of mind, even though some days it's really hard. And I talk about, you know, the sun will rise, but some days it's really overcast.
Before we begin, we'd like to acknowledge that we're recording on the traditional country of the Kaurna people of the Adelaide Plains. We pay respects to elders past, present and emerging. We pass that respect to any Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander listeners. Welcome and thank you, Matt. It's delightful to be here with you today. Where are you joining us from?
Good to meet you too, Sammy. So I join you from Yorta Yorta country here in the Goulburn Valley of Northern Victoria in Shepparton.
Beautiful, beautiful part of the world.
It is, yeah. Very flat, but deceptively flat.
Excellent. So, Matt, you have a really unique story because you were both a bereaved husband and a father of two incredible young men who live with CHD. So I'd love to take you back to where this journey actually started. And how did you find out about your first wife, Tina, having a heart condition? Can you take us through that?
Yes, sure, Sammy. So Tina and I were fortunate enough to have our first child in August 2007. And we noticed through the delivery process, where obviously there's a lot of pressure on the body, that Tina started to have some heart failure sort of symptoms. And the doctors did an amazing job. And we were blessed to have Hamish as our first child. And then with follow-up visits to the cardiologist, diagnosis of hypertrophic cardiomyopathy was discovered. And we knew it was something that continued to watch and monitor, but it wasn't like it was a sudden thing that we needed to prepare for outside of getting to know more about the disease. And when our second child came along in 2007, and it's Claude's birthday today, the doctors could pick up the feel, the heart and the murmuring of the heart. And so both boys were checked and we were surprised to learn that Hamish also was diagnosed with hypertrophic cardiomyopathy as well.
Wow, that must have been so much to process just in itself, isn't it? Because here you are about to welcome your first child and that just in itself is quite an overwhelming, you know, and exciting moment. But to also learn that your lovely wife, Tina, had this, it's a genetic condition, isn't it?
It is, and it's sort of fascinating because Tina's parents were tested and I was tested as well in terms of looking at the mutation and family history, which didn't show it. So Tina was unique in so many ways, even more so with this disease as well. So, yeah, it is genetic, and this is where the Kids Hospital in Melbourne have just been fantastic, not only with the service but also with genetic testing and looking and helping the boys prepare for what the future may look like going forward as well.
I don't think there are any words to place to that. I very much applaud and respect you for sharing this story because it is something that obviously is still so raw. Obviously, time doesn't always, it's not about healing, but time. And when you start to talk about these sorts of things, and so I suppose I'd love for people to understand, what is that process? So all of a sudden you have your beautiful wife, you've got a beautiful son, you're processing all of this. So you mentioned before, obviously now the kids' hospital, but in the beginning, I'm assuming your wife had to go under the care of a cardiologist and that in itself must have been just huge. Was it yearly checkups or was it ongoing?
Yeah, it was quite a journey too, Sammy. So really, really blessed in at that stage we were living in Benalla and we had some really good cardiologists in Wangaratta as well. And because Tina's symptoms were, shall we say, mild, it wasn't that we needed to go to the heart failure clinic in Melbourne. It was a regular catch-up with a cardiologist in Wangaratta. But we also discovered as things progressed that we were having more visits to Melbourne towards the latter part of her life with the boys when they were diagnosed. So Claude and Hamish, we had a visiting paediatrician from from Rural Children's Hospital to Wangaratta about 2 to 3 months after Claude was born. And from that stage, we went to the kids' hospital pretty much every 6 months of the year. And then towards the end, with teen, probably twice a year as well, to the heart failure clinic at the Alfred as well.
Gosh, I was initially a regional heart parent until we moved to the city in the last few years. So I can very much relate to those appointments and that travel and just seeing those dates sometimes on the calendar, isn't it? You try not to think too far ahead, but unfortunately we do, we're human. And when it's so close to you, and I suppose I'd love to understand then how that affected you all as a family. And I suppose you too, as a father, Matt, here's your wife and your boys.
Yeah, it was sort of interesting to read about the condition and what it could mean. And it's sort of different for different people in terms of how the heart and the thickness and where it works, or obstructions and inflows and all sorts of things as well. At first, not that we ever dismissed it, Sammy, but you'd sort of think, well, when someone gets older, that will be more of an issue. But I remember after Claude and Hamish were diagnosed, and it was a 20-minute trip from Wangaratta to Benalla, really quiet trip. Christina and I were still in shock, and we got the boys settled. We went into the bedroom and basically just had a really good cry about it. The thing about teen, and this is the other thing about grief, and I am a better person and a better parent because of Tina. So one thing about Tina was she was always very, very positive and always trying to look ahead, and she was always, to a fault, was always see the best in people. So trying to have that really positive frame of mind, even though some days it's really hard. And I talk about, the sun will rise, but some days it's really overcast.
Yeah.
And you can't see any sun at all. And other days, you need to wear sunglasses because it's just really thin. So it's how do you actually get through that process to keep focusing on? So I think that's been the big thing, Sammy, is trying to, you can worry about all sorts of scenarios, but there's got to be something in the moment around that you're living and that you're trying to nurture, experience all of these things. And that's why, again, I keep telling people who have dealt with grief outside of cardiac heart disease that the sun will rise, and you just got to continue to try and take all of the things that you've learned, you've experienced. The easy thing would be to say what's wrong with the world and this problem admiration versus what's the future? How do we actually make the most of what we've got? And it's a classic thing people say, we'll live every day to the fullest. But I know early on, every night I would kiss the kids goodnight, tell them I'd love them. I'd always try and get home to feed them, all those sorts of things. So these are the experiences you can look back on.
Sure, sure. And it's really one day at a time and one foot in front of the other. So when, if you don't mind me, if you're happy still to keep talking about this, when did Tina... So she passed in 2013. So,
yeah, we just had the 10-year anniversary a couple of weeks ago. So probably the last 6 months, she really started to struggle with the heart failure clinic, and we had blood clots. We had at least two times within the GP, once in the GP and once in the ED at Wangaratta, to put her under and shock her heart back into a normal rhythm.
Oh, gosh.
Ovulations of the heart to try and improve the electrical impulse. So the last 6 months were really, really tough, and she never complained.
Wow. She sounds amazing. And that outlook obviously held your family unit together in that time.
Very much so. Very much so. And, she'd always see the positive things to be focused for the future and not, as I say, sort of be half empty about the world.
And how was she around herself as a mother processing that her boys had this condition?
I'd be lying if I didn't say that we didn't worry at times. But again, it'd be coming back to say, well, what are we dealing with at the moment? How are they? We're doing regular catch-ups and checks with echoes and ECGs at the Royal Children's Hospital. So we're doing everything we could to monitor and see how they were going. And I think that's the peace of mind. I think, Sammy, the thing for me was after Tina died, was first few nights thinking about what's the future look like for the boys. And again, I realised, and that's, again, listening to Tina in the background about trying to think of the future, but also living the day here and there and just doing whatever you can to love and support them every day that they're here.
Takes a lot of courage, Matt. Takes a lot of courage to keep looking ahead.
And look, we've been really fortunate to met someone and remarried, and she's been, and her kids have been amazing. And Kate's a resus ICC nurse. And so that's been great with the kids. But as I said before, Sammy, like I'm a better husband, I'm a better father because of Tina. And that's why I think this thing of, it really used to make me frustrated that I'd met someone remarried and people go, oh, well, you've moved on. And I haven't moved on. I sort of talk about moving forward. And because of Tina, I am the person I am today. So that love and support we've been lucky to have to keep us afloat as well.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing. And I also understand that Tina actually became involved with Heart Kids.
Yeah, look, I remember this was the old Royal Children's Hospital and the new facility is fantastic. But I remember going up to level 3, I think it was, where the cardiology was, and waiting in the room, and there was a brochure for Heart Kids. So sure enough, before we got back to Benalla, Tina had already rung and paid the life membership or something like that and actively got involved. And we'd go to the Christmas party that had been at the zoo and other different places. They had one at Jeff Shed or another facility. So that and local parent groups as well, so that support, which was really important as well.
Yeah, and I suppose it's, I always talk about it, it's an extension of that village, isn't it? You have obviously your family, and then obviously to think that she reached out and got involved in Heart Kids, and here we are today, still connected in that village. It's a beautiful thing. It doesn't obviously replace anything, but I suppose you've got somewhere safe to land.
The other thing through Tina's loss is that we raised about $40,000, $45,000 for Heart Kids.
Gosh, wow.
Yeah, so again, that's how much people thought and Tina meant to them as well. But to put it into perspective about what Heart Kids can do, so 3 months after Tina died, we were visiting my folks up at Gilgandra in New South Wales, and Claude, my youngest, was waking and he was nonverbal. And so we rushed to little old Gilgandra Hospital. We were then ambulanced from Gilgandra to Westmead in Sydney. So you can appreciate 3 months after losing your wife, young son, moving off, and then they're talking about, because of Tina's history, we'll put a defib into this. I wasn't sure what to expect. So speaking with Tracy from Heart Kids,
yes.
Seeing Heart Kids on the ward come around, and Claude, you can imagine Claude was only just turned 6 at that stage. So just getting a sense of this foreign object, where it's going to go, how it's going to work, and the Heart Kids people walking around the ward with the little teddy bear and the feeling of the defib and just prepared him perfectly for surgery. I think I was probably worse and wish it was me than he. And then I just remember waking because I was sleeping on one of those beautiful Hilton hotel beds that you have in the hospital.
Yeah, I know the ones, the chairs that fold out. And you think, really? This is a bed? Okay, no worries.
I think it was about 3 in the morning. He got up and went to the toilet and jumped back in the bed without it as much as a whimper. So yeah, it was fantastic. And did the same when Hamish had his defib put in a couple of years later as well.
Matt, I'm just trying to get my head around all of this. So it's... And honestly, thank you for sharing this story. And I'm sure there's so many people that will be listening that I suppose it's, we all have our own journey. And I think it's beautiful to hear you have that outlook is we all have our own journey. Sometimes we can go really inward and we ask the questions, why me, why us? And then there's those times when you hear, like from you, Matt, and hearing about your beautiful wife, Tina, you're on the other side of this and you're sharing this story. But I'm still just trying to get my head around in the moment. Here is your wife, beautiful wife, about to give birth to a bundle of joy, which is the most joyous time. And then to know that she had cardiomyopathy, to then having Claude and Hamish, then both of them having a diagnosis, and then also to Tina's passing. It's so much to grapple with. It's so much, even just for me, just hearing you talk about this is, and it's so beautiful that the way you expressing still all that love that you have for Tina. And I completely appreciate, you know, you've taken that, like you said, is to be a better man and now a better husband. And I'm sure you've always been a wonderful father. It's quite clear. So I suppose, how would you surmise grief if someone was listening right now and they're very much in the throes of this? What would you share with them?
Well, it's certainly different times, but very early on, the rawness of the experience, and I explain it that basically we all know what a cramp feels like. And for me early on, it was like every muscle, every being of my body was going through a cramp situation and points where you didn't want to move, you didn't want to get out. And, you know, one view would be that it's unfair and difficult with 2 young kids. And yes to that, but the other substance to add to it is that they still need you to be at your best and be able to do things. So what I learned early on was how that you could get through the day. So whether it be having the shower first up and then having a really good cry with the music blaring and apologies to my old neighbours, to making sure that there's a positive face, but also one that didn't stop the stories about Tina and their mother, and sharing some of those funny stories about things that would happen or had happened in the past. And, you know, it's such an important thing. Other things is you've really in that situation. So Tina was 38. She'd been planning my 40th, all that sort of stuff. To go from getting the kids settled into bed and sitting down and having a conversation and then watching a show or doing something else to this being yourself at 8 o'clock at night, and that becomes real as well. So there's a number of different stages that you will go through. There are certainly no doubted stages I went through that I was very half empty about things. But you quickly realize about your obligations and responsibilities to your children about helping prepare them to be the best that they can be, but also to seize opportunities when they present themselves.
Yeah, wise, so wise. And I love that you are apologizing to your neighbors for. So what was it that you're actually singing at the top of your lungs?
Well, it certainly wasn't Celine Dion or anything like that, but it may or may not have been a bit of Cold Chisel and Guns N' Roses' Appetite for Destruction.
Excellent, excellent. Just so that we can put it out there and really let people know our ages. Excellent.
Yeah, correct, yeah.
Like through that time, and you are in a small community when this is all going on, so they're seeing a young family being affected in this way. Are there things that you really responded to that people did for you, and were there other things that you thought, oh gosh, please don't say that, please don't do that?
Yeah, look, there was lots of things. Growing up in a small town in Gilgander, and Tina grew up in a small town called Nethera, just north of Echuca. I think, Sammy, for me, it was really trying to do that fundraising or something, and I wasn't sure what it was.
Sure.
But some of Tina's friends came up with this idea for a movie night. Friends of mine in Gilgander did this sort of charity netball event with junior football sort of stuff, and just really powerful story. So in my hometown of Gilgander, they raised $10,000 in one day.
Wow.
You know, the movie night raised a heap of money. Mathera did things. My work, Tina's work did things. I think it's really about how people feel that they can contribute. And it's always the thing, oh, if you need anything, you let me know. And I used to joke with people and say, well, if you want, you can come around and wash my windows, you know, the dirty and the look on their face where they start to sort of retreat.
Yes.
But something around common purpose, and we see this, right? I work in regional development, and we see this with communities that rally above. If there's a common belief and purpose and a sense of purpose, they can achieve many things. And for me early on, it was really about that. There were some really weird things that people would say to you, like someone said to me, God only does it to the people who can cope with it. And I just thought,
well, that's the strongest.
Really, really, really weird. And I don't hold anything bad against them. I just know that people struggle to find what they think may or may not be the right thing. And I think this is the other thing with grief. I certainly felt that I was supporting people with their grief about Tina, and not that I was looking for supports and so forth. So there was that. There were friends that would come around and would visit, would ring regularly. My mum and dad were amazing, and Tina's mum and dad were as well. So it's about having that support. But I think for me, it was really, really that sense of purpose that we could do to remember and acknowledge Tina, and the fact that we could raise that money for Heart Kids and something she felt passionate about was really important.
That must be so powerful for your boys to see. For your boys, I'm sure now they're what, young men, that they've seen you through this, and they would have been looking to you the whole time, and you would have been acutely aware of this. And to see that you've obviously channeled that energy and, like you said, found your purpose in fundraising and keeping Tina's memory alive. And I think that's beautiful, the whole talking about Tina. I think it's unusual, isn't it, how sometimes when people pass, we think that talking about them is going to make someone else feel uncomfortable or whatever else. I've personally lost both my parents, my dad when I was 4, my mum when I was 25. And it never ceased to amaze me that people didn't want to bring up my parents around me. And I love the fact that you've continued that and talked about it openly and obviously in such a beautiful way with your boys. So I'd love for you to tell me more about Hamish and Claude. Like, how old are they both now? You mentioned it's Claude's birthday.
So Claude turned 16 today and
wow.
Hamish is 19. So Hamish is studying performing arts at Federation Uni in Ballarat.
Wow.
And he's handled his diagnosis really well, where even though there's with the course and even when we're in Benalla, and I think at about 12, he played the role of a young Peter Allen, the boy from Oz, with the theatre company in Benalla and seen him sing and dance and all that sort of stuff.
Amazing.
Amazing. So he's following his passion. And he's participated in some videos that will come out soon with Heart Kids. And I'm just really proud of what he's overcome and the ability that he could follow his dreams and something that, like, his mum was very passionate about, the arts. We have a patron package for the Shepparton Festival in memory of Tina that we take it every year. So it's really good that Hamish has been able to do that. Claude's condition was a bit more severe, not that you'd know it. He's always looked like a normal kid.
Sure.
But he had open heart surgery year before last, and Claude is a bit like me. He's a basketball junkie,
yes,
but he could never play.
Oh.
But since the surgery, he's been able to play. So,
oh gosh, Matt, that's wonderful.
Oh, it is. And his first shot was a 3-pointer, and it was nothing but net, Sammy. So,
oh,
it was fantastic. So, he's been really active, and he's sort of coaching. He's coaching his little sister's team, and so really active. And we go down to the NBL, and Claude gets dressed up. And so, if we sit center court, not because we're rich, but just because I'm mortgaged to the hill and want to give the kids the best experience. But Claude gets dressed up as
about
the green.
Living. Yes.
That's right. Claude gets dressed up as the green man at the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix game. And the Phoenix, by the way, just to give them a plug, after Claude's surgery, they signed him to a one-day contract with the team so he could run out with the team.
Oh,
on
my
game
gosh.
Night, which was amazing.
I'm covered in goosebumps. I'm not even joking. I'm covered in goosebumps. That is just, that's magic. That is absolutely magic.
They're both living their best lives. And I look, Claude's probably interested, and it'll change, right? Like, it all changes for us when you're in year 10 to year 12 and what you're going to do. But Claude is thinking at this stage is probably sports management. And I'm more of the sort of the Bachelor of Economics sort of bent rather than the arts or science bent. And I think Claude's going to be a bit more like me.
So you've got a left brain and a right brain.
Very much, yeah. I'm not sure if they'll make money, but hey, they've got every opportunity to shoot for the stars and we'll support them to find, like we will with our beloved big family. Between Kate and I, we've got 6 kids, and whatever we can do to support them to find the niche or happiness, that's what our job is, right?
Yeah, it is. It is. Thank you so much for sharing all of this, Matt. I know, to start with, obviously, Tina's diagnosis, then your boys, then the passing of Tina suddenly, and then navigating it as a father, and like you've done so beautifully, clearly keeping her memory alive, but also too, you're clearly raising, and I understand you've got 4 other children, but it's these boys, Hamish and Claude, they sound like, I think they're going to change the world.
We'll see. I think it's just like, as we, like all parents, you know, you want to give them the opportunity, but it is, and that's why I think through Tina's passing and the fundraising, and we've seen the very best of people, Sammy, whether it be someone that's come up and donated $50 because mum did X, Y, and Z for them.
Yes.
Whether it's Claude running out with Southeast Melbourne Phoenix in a basketball game or whatever. And there is that, what I'm really proud of is whenever there's a bad day or they're going through a challenge, they can think of a positive way forward. And the other thing, which I think Heart Kids does really well, and we haven't really talked about it, is that sort of matchmaking. I suppose you'd call it Tinder on steroids or something like that for services.
Yes, yes.
You know, I'm going through this, and you speak to Heart Kids and they go, well, you need to speak to this family. We'll get you in contact with them so you can start to share and understand what you're going for. So, again, when I spoke about Claude going through his defib surgery in Westmead, being able to speak to another family and knowing what to expect and how that would potentially play out was a massive relief too. So I think for kids, like for the boys and for all of our kids, they get a sense of you don't necessarily need to know the answer, but you need to know the people that do and how do you have that network to get that support to give you the most solutions you can find.
Mm. No. Well said. As I alluded to earlier, I always refer to it as our village.
Yeah.
The Heart Kids Village. There's someone who knows someone or someone connect to someone else that might just give a little bit more insight into the journey that's in front of you. Well, thank you so much, Matt, for today. And oh my gosh, I give my love to you. I wish Claude a beautiful 16th birthday. I hope his birthday meal is everything that he asked for.
I'm not sure what we'll be getting. I'm sure it won't be good for me at my age, Sammy. But anyway, it's not about me. It's about what his choice of dietitian meal is today.
That's right. That's right. Well, thank you so much, Matt. I really appreciate you sharing your story.
No worries, Sammy. Thank you. Anytime.
Sometimes this podcast talks about some heavy things. If this brings up anything for you or someone you love, it is important to reach out for support. The Heart Kids Helpline provides support and guidance for anyone impacted by CHD. You can call the helpline on 1800 432 785. To access more information about CHD, as well as support from Heart Kids, visit the website at heartkids.org.au. The information on this podcast is not a substitute for medical advice from your doctor or healthcare team. Always talk to your doctor about matters that affect you or your family's health.